Thank you. This time I'm following the original title. This is part one. Part one, I won't say anything interesting, because otherwise people may not come back for part two. But I will have to say everything. Part two won't make any sense unless I explain these things. So what I'm going to be talking about in connection with the topic of yesterday's lecture are the structures, the cohomology groups I just mentioned in passing. They're going to play a more central role. General conjectures predict that the different cohomology groups are all manifestations of the same structure, that one theory predicts the other. So, but this theory has a different nature. In fact, it's more geometric, much more geometric, and it's closer to the original intuition of modular forms. This is classical modular forms fit into this theory in a way. They don't fit in with Galois representations. So I'm going to, this is the list of topics. Today I'm going to talk about general techniques in relation to representation theory and introduce the main objects, and tomorrow I'll explain the relations to special values of L functions and other questions. So here are some open questions I will not talk about. First, how one goes about constructing the Galois representations I talked about yesterday and the associated motives. How one constructs other Galois representations that were not covered by the techniques I discussed yesterday, but may be accessible by extending available means. And then the other automorphic Galois representations that should exist, but one has absolutely no idea how to construct. But with regard to one, the Galois representations are mostly realized in the L-adic cohomology of certain Chamorro varieties. So in that sense, I will be talking about this, because I'm going to be talking about Chamorro varieties. And therefore, today I'm going to be talking about the other cohomological realizations of these same motives with the theory of Chamorro varieties. So this is to motivate and to justify the discussion of Chamorro varieties over the coming hour. There's a fair amount of notation. The questions I'll be talking about mainly tomorrow have to do with Deligne's conjecture on critical values of L functions for motives. He has conjectures about special values of L functions, which are part of a vaster series of conjectures by Berenson, Bloch, Kato, and others. This is, in some sense, the simplest and most geometric part of the conjecture. And furthermore, since L functions of motives can only, practically all cases, be studied by use of automorphic by means of automorphic forms, these are the cases where one can study these conjectures. Related question, relations among period invariants naturally attached to automorphic representations, some of which I'm going to describe today, and the relations between those two questions. And finally, although I really won't have time to go into it very much, how special values of L functions are related to congruences among automorphic representations, which is very briefly the reason I'm looking at these questions again. So I'm going to be talking about coherent cohomology of a certain class of vector bundles on Chamorro varieties. These are general, as I said, the generalization of classical theory of holomorphic modular forms. I lectured on this in Ann Arbor in 1988, but some of the people who are here don't remember what I talked about, so I'm going to give them a second chance. And I guess I should say that this theory, although I have an interest in this for the reasons indicated there, my revived interest in this, I should say that other people have been writing about this topic in the last few years. Lan and Su wrote a paper on vanishing of cohomology, the torsion in cohomology in the So this would be the torsion in either the coherent or piatic etalic homology. By developing this theory over integer rings, and there has been a lot of work recently on the holomorphic part of this cohomology in connection with the theory of eigenvarieties, work of Andreata Piloni, Iovita Stevens, and have I left Stroll? Yeah, right. So the theory is in the air. I'm going to be talking mostly about the complex analytic part of the theory, but related. So, Shimura variety, one cannot escape, when one talks about Shimura varieties, one cannot escape defining them. So here's what they are. G is a reductive algebraic group. X is it really should be a Hermitian symmetric space, but in order to get a nice equivariant theory, one takes a certain finite union of Hermitian symmetric spaces on which the points of the group act, the rational points act. And Deligne's, of course, Shimura varieties were introduced by Shimura, but Deligne came up with a definition that is much more useful, to the point that nobody, much to Shimura's regret, nobody really reads Shimura's papers anymore, although they contain a lot that is not really in the general theory. Anyway, the points of this space X are parameterized by certain homomorphisms into the real points of the group. So this is a homomorphism of real groups, which means that the Shimura variety becomes a moduli space or a parameter space for certain kinds of variations of Hodge structures. So whenever you have a local system over the Shimura variety, you get a variation of Hodge structures, and that's the main thing to bear in mind. The finite Edels are there in order to unify the theory, to make it possible to talk about, to relate to representation theory. K is open, is an open compact subgroup, but it would be impolite not to mention that SGX. The level K part, that's what you get when you fix the K. This is something like a disjoint union of, let's say, pick any connected component of X, and then this is a union of the quotients. This is a genuine Hermitian symmetric domain, and gamma alpha is a finite. These are the finite collection of quotients of the Hermitian symmetric domain by an arithmetic subgroup, a congruent subgroup. So this is a classical object in differential geometry, local union of locally symmetric varieties. So there's these K is on the wrong side. Along with the definition of the point of X as homomorphisms, one automatically gets the centralized of the homomorphism. This is always a reductive group. And moreover, if you take the quotient of the centralizer by the center, the real point of the center of the group, then you get. So here I'm cheating. Kx is an algebraic group, which is defined over some number field in general, but I'm also thinking of the real points, and the quotient is a maximal compact connected subgroup. So the action on this symmetric space is by the obvious conjugation either of the homomorphism Hx or Kx. So if you prefer to think of X as a symmetric space and G as the Lie group acting on the symmetric space, that's fine, but one can do much more representation theory looking at it this way. Now, all of these Shimura varieties, what Shimura proved in most cases, in all the most interesting cases, is that these varieties, together with the natural action of on the right of this family is defined over a certain number field. The number field is always a totally real or CM field. It's called the reflex field, and it's some more notation. It's easy to define the reflex field in terms of the geometry of X. Here's the definition. If H of X, which the homomorphism is contained in a rational torus, you call X a CM point corresponding to I should say that the most interesting cases are all moduli spaces of abelian varieties with one structure or another, and then the CM points correspond to abelian varieties with complex multiplication. And when X is a CM point, then the group KX is rational over a specific number field, and then the reflex field is the intersection of these number fields. It's one of Shimura's theorems. And in general, I wrote this. This is in fact outrageous that I wrote this. I said the theorem is proved by Barvoy and Milne that they have that these all have a canonical model. But really, I should have started with Shimura because Shimura did really do this for in all the cases that anybody ever uses. Not all the cases anybody ever uses. There are some cases that people try to understand. Anyway. So now I'm going to talk about the vector bundles. So X check. So PX is a KX times, let's say, UX. This is a maximal compact subgroup with abelian unipotent radical. There's only one such in conjugacy class in a group. In group G, Kx being the Levy factor, and the family of these, the set of such Px's, the conjugacy class, is a flag variety, partial flag variety, and that's X hat. X hat is the set of these P conjugate to Px. Not all of them are of the form Px because X is a bounded domain which is an orbit of real points, and X check is an orbit of a complex point. And the pair also has a canonical model over EGX. Really, of course, since this is a flag variety over Q, it also has a model over Q, but we do not look at that one as another model, which allows us to do the following construction. So if you start with an equivariant vector bundle on the compact dual, then you can pull it back because X is contained in X check. We pull V back to, let's say, V restricted to X. And then we can take the quotient, and what we get is an automorphic vector bundle with a mark with the brackets. But an equivariant vector bundle on X check is nothing more. If you fix a base point, if you restrict, look at the fiber at the base point, then you just get a representation of the stabilizer, and that's an equivalence of categories. And so what you get is this diagram of equivalences, which gives you a tensor functor. This the first entry is just the representation category of the stabilizer Px. Then V is the equivariant vector bundle on X check, and V brackets is the automorphic vector bundle. And the automorphic vector bundles are built in an action of and every this action is the group theoretic version of the Hecke action. So the Hecke operators are all already defined in all the cohomology of these vector bundles. So these are equivalent to the tensor categories. Now, the point, I'm not going to give the algebraic definition, but this construction is purely algebraic, and so it's defined over the reflex field. Moreover, although I won't go into detail, if you are would like to have a theory that's defined not over the reflex field, but over Q, then when you conjugate a Shimura variety, you get a different Shimura variety, and everything can be defined up to the action of the Galois group of Q, which is what I was talking about yesterday. Here's an example, a particular simple example. So suppose K is an imaginary quadratic field, and W is an n-dimensional Hermitian space with signature PQ, depending on one of the complex embeddings of K. Then you take G, the group of similitudes of the Hermitian form. In that case, the real points of the group is GU PQ. Then the Hermitian symmetric space is, up to possible disconnectedness, a symmetric domain in matrix space. So that's it. And but for reasons of equivariance, it's better not. Here I fixed a base point, but it's better not to fix a base point in general. So if P is different from Q, then the reflex field is just the imaginary quadratic field K. If P is equal to Q, then it's Q. Like that. But in any case, the stabilizer of the decomposition, if you write down a decomposition with into definite spaces, then the stabilizer is a k-rational form. If it's k-rational decomposition, you get a k-rational form of this group. And in this case, but not in general, the reflex field of the whole variety is the same as the reflex field at this point. So the automorphic vector bundles are essentially classified by representations of this group. They're actually more. These are the irreducible, fully decomposable automorphic vector bundles. And there's a completely analogous theory, which only differs by the number of indices over any general CF field. I will be returning to this example because there's some theorems related to that. So now I'm going to do some representation theory. Not too quickly. So, in representation theory, there is a way, of course, you start by choosing a Cartan subalgebra and look at its set of roots and weights, but it's natural to talk about the canonical Cartan subalgebra because when things have been chosen in the right way, there's a unique isomorphism to take from one to another, one choice to another. And in this setting, you can find a Weyl group, and then the center of the enveloping algebra of the Lie algebra of G. Yes. Oh, yes. I should have said that. So G is the Lie algebra of G, and then the center of the enveloping algebra is by Harish Chandra's theorem is isomorphic in a natural way to the enveloping algebra of H, which is a polynomial ring on which the Weyl group acts, and it's the invariance in that. And now I'm defining objects notation with defining the notation and the objects at the same time. So the eta is a dominant weight is in. The dominant weights are in bijection with the irreducible representations. And we take the ideal annihilating the representation attached to this dominant weight, an algebraic representation. Everything is completely algebraic. So, some notation. Now, here maybe I should stop for a moment. So, the representations of G. So G, being the kind of group, the real point of G, G being the kind of group that acts on a Hermitian symmetric space, has the property that it has a discrete series. So the discrete series are the building blocks of the representation theory of the unitary representation theory of the group G. And I, what can I say about them? Not so much. What I can say is that if you start with so the objects of representation theory of GR are in fact not representations of G, but they are G K. Let's fix point X modules. So these are so spaces W on which, actually I'll call them pi. So pi infinity on which U of G and Kx act compatibly. And when one of them is irreducible, then it automatically is annihilated by a maximal ideal in the center of the enveloping algebra. And that's the infinitesimal character is the same thing as the maximal ideal of the enveloping algebra that it annihilates it. So that it's so let's say pi has infinitesimal character eta. That means that I eta is equal to the annihilator of pi in the center. Okay? So, there are lots more ideals than dominant weights. These dominant weights have an integrality property, but the integrality property is somehow the basis of the representation theory, nevertheless. The finite dimensional representations have ideals defined by dominant weights, and we consider the other representations, the other GK modules that are annihilated by the same infinitesimal character. Well, then, same I eta. Well, it turns out that they inside this collection there is a class of unitary representations, of square integral representations, and that is to say, isolated points in the Poincaré measure. And this is the discrete series L packet. So it's a collection of these things. And the number of elements in this packet is interestingly related to what I've been talking about so far. So the number can be described in several ways. The least intuitive way of describing them, but in some ways the most useful, is to say that if we look at the flag variety, by which I mean the G modulo Borel subgroup, then the members of this L packet are in bijection, in a natural bijection, with closed Kx orbits in that flag variety. So Kx is now an algebraic group again. It's acting on the flag variety of G, and it has a finite set of closed orbits. All of its orbits are algebraic. So for example, G equals GL2. Let me give an example, because I think that should be the only example anybody ever writes down anyway. G equals GL2, Kx is actually GL1. I mean, it's a torus. It's a maximal torus. It's a torus T0, 0, T inverse. Of course, it's also it has a compact inner form, and that's the part that, so Kxc, the complexification, is isomorphic to that. The flag variety is just P1, and the action of, as a torus on P1 is just multiplication. I've somehow squared it, but yeah, but that's, I know, but I don't. But it has two fixed points. It has a fixed point, the North Pole and the South Pole, and those are the closed orbits in the, in the discrete series L packet of SL2. So I have been, also, I will have been cheating and will continue to cheat with regard to the fact that the group G is not semi-simple. Things are, the representation theory is somewhat simpler for semi-simple groups, but it's not so good for arithmetic. Anyway, these are in bijection with closed KX orbits. And the number of elements in phi alpha. This is also important. This is equal to the number of elements in the Weyl group of G, let's say H, divided by KX H, where H is a Cartan subgroup contained both in contained in KX. The property of being of having a discrete series precisely is that you can take the same Cartan subgroup for KX as for G. That's the number of points. And that one, well, there's a whole theory, which is the theory of localization of Bellinson and Bernstein. I'm now indexing these the elements of this L packet by their orbit together with the infinitesimal character. I've taken the brackets off the infinitesimal character because I'm now it better be dominant from now on. But what happens is that the collection of these representations, that is to say, the spaces, the actual spaces, the GKX module together with the whole collection in the packet has a natural EX eta structure. So X being the choice of maximal compact and eta, the infinitesimal character. And I put this data in because when you conjugate by the Galois group of Q, then you act on the variables inside the parentheses as well. Moreover, phi eta is in bijection with a collection of automorphic vector bundles. This is another. So this, I will explain how this is done. There's more than one way to write this. Basically, there are two natural ways, holomorphic and epiholomorphic. Here's how they work. So there is a kind of cohomology. It's not exactly the cohomology. So these are coherent sheaves on the Shamur variety. I mean, take something that's not quite the cohomology of the variety with coefficient to coherent sheaf, but not too far removed. And this is decomposes as a tensor product of a global part and a local part. The global part is, I think I will have to say what this is. So this A0G is the space of cuspidal automorphic represent of more cusp forms, I should say, space of cusp forms on G. So the global part, it says essentially how many times the fixed representation of pi y eta occurs as inside the space of automorphic forms. So now so automorphic forms are break up as representations not just of the enveloping algebra of G, but also the finite ideals, but that has to be accounted for later. Meanwhile, there's the local part, which is a space of Lie algebra cohomology. So the definition is on the next line. So Lie algebra cohomology, so pi is now any GK module, any representation. I've taken the fiber of this vector bundle at x. This is the vector bundle without the brackets. So this is the vector bundle on the compact dual, so I can actually take this fiber at point x and not at some orbit of x. And then this is a relatively algebra cohomology space, which is defined as the derived functors of the invariants under the Lie algebra, a tensor product. And this, the thing is, this is a calculation due essentially to Schmidt, and I guess also possibly also Floyd Williams. First, it's almost always zero. Cohomology is almost always zero. It's zero unless, let's say, K pi is now in the L packet. It's there some other, maybe some other extraneous non-unitary representations. But inside the L packet, there's only one that gives you something non-zero, and it only gives it in one degree. It's degree, I just call Q of Y. And in that degree, the space is one-dimensional. So in other words, whatever this cohomology is with the exclamation mark, it is essentially when either zero or it's the number of ways the representation occurs in the cusp forms. And that's not quite true. There may be a slight error, but if G is anisotropic, then there's no problem. The exclamation mark is unnecessary. It's just the actual coherent cohomology of the coherent sheaf. This is not only a coherent sheaf; it's a vector bundle. For general G, was defined. In the 1980s, using toroidal compactifications. But some people, even after having listened to two lectures on the topic in 1988, have forgotten what they were about. I should recall some of the main results. So, if it's not compact, if G is anisotropic, then SGX is compact. But if not, it's certainly not compact. But starting with the theory of compactifications, Satake and Billy Borel, various kinds of compactifications were constructed, and the famous book of Ash, Mumford, Rappaport, and Tai, recently reissued, probably in a new edition, constructed a family of smooth projective toroidal compactifications, which are indexed by combinatorial data that have a very, very long list of properties. But there's some, rather than going through the list of data, let me just say what the formal properties of these things are. So if you take a smaller K prime, then you can get the compatible sigma prime in such a way that you can extend maps. These maps of open Chamorro varieties almost always are atal. That's certainly not true at the boundary. But let's suppose we assume that the complement of the open Chamorro variety is a smooth divisor with normal crossings. Then there's a canonical extension defined originally by Mumford, but can be defined more conveniently in terms of Dedin's canonical extension in the theory of differential equations with regular singular points. And it's a functor. It's, again, a tensor functor. It's a vector bundle. Because, as I said, the maps as k and k prime vary are no longer atal, there's no natural way for the adels to act fixing on a fixed sigma. But as you let all the k and all the sigma vary, these are compatible. And if you change k and sigma, then the pullback of the one is the other one, and the push forward of the first one is the second, and there's no higher cohomology. So it's as if this were a... Maybe there's a sensible way of describing this, but where you have families of spaces like this, but it just works. In any case. So this is a this is canonically independent of sigma. It is, in fact, a representation of the finite Adels, which is admissible in the sense I described yesterday. So here is a definition. This is a definition which the choices have been removed from the notation and replaced by a tilde. That's half the theory. But now the other half of the theory is what you get by tensoring with the ideal sheaf of the divisor at infinity, and you get another admissible representation. And then the interior cohomology, which I defined, is the image of the one and the other. And this, usually, if eta is regular, if eta is not on a wall, then this is equal to the cusp forms. If eta is on a wall, there may be some other parts as well. And it's also contained in what ought to be the analog of intersection cohomology. Defined. So let me give a classical example. Suppose I equals 0, then this is nothing more than a space of holomorphic modular forms. And if you put the interior cohomology, this is the subspace of holomorphic cusp forms. And the action of GAF gives you the action of Hecke operators and changing levels. The automorphic vector bundles, when G equals GL2, are nothing more than the usual bundles whose sections define holomorphic modular forms. And probably I should have said this at the beginning. If you take, if eta is 0, then eta is not actually in general going to be in general, it is for some cases. It's not going to be the J forms. It's going to be some direct sum end of the J forms. The collection of automorphic vector bundles corresponding to a discrete series packet defines a kind of refinement of the classical differential forms. But in any case, the functors work as you would expect. If you take the J forms on the compact dual and you bracket them, then you get the J forms on the Shamur variety. And if you then extend canonically, what you get is the bundle of J forms with logarithmic poles. So, well, all of these constructions are rational over the reflex field, and furthermore, they commute with the action of the Galois group of Q on the collections of everything, including the G's and X's. And here's the upshot. So let pi be an irreducible automorphic representation whose infinite part is one of these discrete series modules. Then the space pi, and by this space I mean the whole representation and not only the finite part, has a natural rational structure over a field depending on all the parameters. So there's the finite part, which has been known for a long time to be defined over a number field, and these I've picked an x that was a CM point, and so we get a rational structure on an automorphic representation that contributes to cohomology. And moreover, the Galois group acts on these naturally, as I said, permuting all the indices. So before I continue, let me just say that I could have this rational structure, the one that I say is natural, is by no means the simplest rational structure. There's another much simpler rational structure. If you completely forget about Shamur varieties, you can just look at the rational structure of the flag variety and the action of kx on it, and then you will get essentially tautologically rational structures on the modules, just because the modules in the localization theory are the GK modules are the sections of these sheaves supported on the closed orbits. But that's not the right one. That's not, that will not have the property that goes in here. What's missing, and this took me some time to understand, is that for some reason one has to introduce periods of CM abelian varieties into the definition. You have to multiply the forms by periods of CM abelian varieties. This I already knew in the holomorphic case, but it's true in general. So now let me define the Durham cohomology. This is in order to define the constituents of the motives attached to automorphic representations. So same notation as before. So here I'm considering eta as the highest weight, W eta is not the highest weight of the original representation, but of the dual representation. This is actually in contradiction to what I wrote before. Then the cuspidal representations with this given pi infinity contribute to the topological interior cohomology. Topological interior cohomology is easier to define. You actually don't have to compactify anything. It's the image of the cohomology with compact support in the cohomology. This has been studied for some time. And this has cohomology in a number of degrees in general, but the discrete series only contributes to cohomology in the middle degree. And W tilde, if you have a representation, then you get a local system. And this now is defined, this now has a rational structure over the field of definition of the local system. It's purely topological. It doesn't require anything else. It doesn't pay attention to the algebraic, the fact that it's algebraic. I probably should have said here there should be this is the space of complex points. I should have put that there. So, just as because these are all in cohomology, these are spaces. Local systems carry a variation of Hodge structure because, as I said, that's what you get from Shamur varieties. So you have a Hodge decomposition. You have to tensor with C, and then you get the sum over the Y's in the orbit, the Y's in the packet, the orbits, of the cohomology in varying degrees of the corresponding automorphic vector bundles. And the tensor products have to be taken over some number fields, which I don't indicate. So this is the part of, this is the differential geometric part of the motive attached to pi f. Now, yesterday I was talking about motives attached to representations of GLN, automorphic representations of GLN. Here, GLN never shows up as a G in this theory. So in order to get a motive attached to GLN, one has to use Langlands functoriality to transfer to one of these Gs. But that's now a standard with G specifically for unitary groups. So the period of isomorphism, here I've written this is in the graded form, really, one should not, the right-hand side is the associated graded to a filtration, the Hodge filtration on the algebraic Durham cohomology, and that's the more natural isomorphism. But this is easier to write down. So, together with the L-adic realizations, which I talked about yesterday, although I didn't say what they were, these are the actual atal L-adic cohomology, and the comparison isomorphisms, the topological cohomology, and the algebraic Durham cohomology, which I wrote down. This is what I call the absolute Hodge motive attached to the representation. And the L function is of the motive is determined by the L-adic realizations and the periods by the other two. And Have I run out of things to say so soon? No, not quite. Not quite. Got plenty more to say, but that's going to may not be on the slides. So I'm going to talk about the relations between these structures in the next lecture. An open question. Can the p-adic comparison isomorphisms be understood by automorphic methods? This is a question that I guess p-adic, when I first started looking at this, the p-adic comparison isomorphisms were only incompletely understood, and very little has actually been done in this direction. Especially, so a lot has been done for cohomology in degree zero, as I mentioned earlier, but practically nothing for the higher dimensional cohomology, coherent cohomology. So here are the isomorphisms, I write them down, that look just like the Hodge theoretic, Hodge decomposition, except here it's not a decomposition. One could undo that. So we're taking some p-adic completion of the reflex field, and B de Rham is some tens ring, less said, the better, I think. So understand, how would one test that one has actually understood this? Well, from my point of view, this means by application to some number theoretic questions, so particularly the p-adic L functions, and related main conjectures. And there are many open questions about this, but almost nothing is known. So now I have, so maybe I will say a little bit more about this, because I have time. So, the first, are there any questions? Are there any questions? Maybe should I, is there anything I went through too quickly, for example? You don't have a question, Matt? Well, because I'm going to say something about the p-adic L functions in a minute, but that's all right. Yes. Right. It's something really, really strange. The point is that the rational structure is given k-type by k-type. And so and K acts, if you have, so basically there's a, so you have this torus, I call it H, so H in KX. And H is what this thing is called S to H. And, so you forget about kx and just think of it as a modulo over h. Now h is acting on the representation, and now so you pull it back to the Shimura variety for h, and it doesn't. And the representation is now some infinite sum of finite dimensional representations of that. But the basis of the theory of the canonical models of automorphic vector bundles is to reduce the whole theory to the case of a CM point. And for a CM point, you can forget that you have a discrete series representation of anything. You just have a sum of modules. And then you can break it into character spaces. So now, for each character space, you get a period. This is Shimura theory of periods. Depends on H and on the character. So there's some period P of H of chi. And there are other ways of writing this. I guess really I should call P. I've written it in other ways. P H X chi. So this is some product periods of the CM abelian variety attached to H and to X. And it need not be a CM abelian variety. I mean, because in general, this HX is not itself, this is not really a family of CM abelian varieties, but it's some CM modus of some kind. But ultimately, this can be related to CM abelian variety. So the upshot is that the various H eigenspaces, each H eigenspace is decorated by some transcendental, presumably transcendental factor, which is a product of periods of CM abelian varieties. And that is something that, if one would ever have to calculate, would be one would have to remember that. One might be tempted to forget that was in that theory. Ultimately, it disappears because it's the reason one introduces these is that without them, one does not have the equivariance under the action of the Galois group over Q. So to give you a concrete example, when Blasius proved the Galois conjecture for Hecke L series, if you actually have ever looked at carefully at this proof, which is not so easy because he wrote it half in Shimura's language and half in contemporary language, but if you ever looked at the proof, you see that when you conjugate various, you have to introduce certain kinds of signs, depending on how many complex embeddings have been taken to their complex conjugates. That's what these periods are accounting for. So if you don't do that, then you can, if you don't pay attention to that, then you can get a structure ad hoc, and but then you will not get equivariance with respect to the full Galois group. The other point you may have wondered, why do you care about anything other than the highest weight, the minimal k-type? Why is it not enough to look at the vectors that are in the minimal k-type? That I will be explaining in tomorrow's talk, but I can say very briefly that it has to do with pairings of representations. You can have pairings of representations that have no algebraic meaning whatsoever, and nevertheless, they can be the rationality can be determined up to some factors which are built into the theory, which one has an interest in understanding. Actually, I've practically used up my time. With two more questions, and I'll be. Any more questions? I may not have time to get to this tomorrow. Though, if I speed up, then I can say twice as much as I prepared. So the basic sort of thing one gets is in studying p-adic L functions, trying to understand the special values of L functions, that you get the L function at some special value of some representation is equal to some sort of integral involving f1, f2, f3, maybe, over G of A modulo G of Q, dG, where F I is in pi I. I have never seen an example where there were more than three, but I have seen many examples where there are three. And then what you prove is that these F I belong to, let's say, is in, say, lambda I times pi I of the E of x, eta, y, etc. So then, This means that this is equal to a product of lambda I times some additional factor, say P123, that tells you what this integral does. P123 has a property of F1, F2 is equal. So the integral of F1, F2, F3 is equal to, let's say, Q bar times P123. If Fi is in pi I of the space X. So, the setup, which I will describe more in detail tomorrow, is that you have this integral conceals some trilinear or bilinear, I mean, this one might just be one, morphism from representation spaces. And the representation spaces have a rational structure in such a way, rational structures over whatever fields are in question, so that this integral is always equal to an algebraic number times some fixed complex number, which may also involve some additional data. So, this is a way to prove that the L function, the special value of an L function, is some period times an algebraic number. And that's the general form of Dedekind's conjecture. And then what I will explain tomorrow is that the periods that you get are not, in general, the periods that you want. You just get them. The automorphic theory gives you some constants. And then it's a challenge to show, in either to prove that this product of constants is what Dedekind predicts in his conjecture, or to say that if you knew something like the Hodge conjecture, the Tate conjecture, then you would get what Dedekind predicts. It's what more or less the sort of thing I'm going to be talking about tomorrow. And the motivation, I was going to say something about the motivation, the Piatek motivation, but I'll say that. Just say one more thing. Those of you who are planning to stick around after I leave until the end of the month, you should not be surprised to see some of these objects on the blackboard again, but I won't tell you anything more about that.